good, now that we've settled that. Okay. Welcome to a podcast of One's Own. I'm here today with Sky.
Hi.
You hear everything just happening in your mouth.
I'm also here with Kara.
Hello.
I'm Kate. And this week we're going to be talking about the newest James Bond film. I don't know what number in the series it is. I don't know what number of Bond he is.
Are any of us big Bond
no,
scholars?
No, I've seen maybe scholars.
Scholars
B- B.A.'s. Bachelor of Bond Arts is how far I got into that. Yeah. No, I've only seen, I think, two of the ones that aren't Craig.
I've seen a bunch of them. I'm not a scholar, but I think I've seen one of each.
I don't think I've seen Timothy Dalton, and then I was like, is that the doctor? And now that we've established our legitimacy,
Sean Connery and Roger Moore.
I haven't seen any more. I've seen maybe one or two Connerys way back in the day that I don't remember.
Regardless. Just wondering, none of us are experts, so.
So, this will not be super well steeped in Bond mythology, except for the little bit I guess we know from pop culture research.
Yeah.
But we're going to be talking about the newest one, Skyfall, with the Adele song. And for a while we were trying to figure out our living as a feminist question of the week and talking around basically the core of the idea of the question, trying to figure out a way to phrase it that was not too pretentious, but
and got inclusive
and, you know, could be, but we determined that actually the question we were asking, and therefore what is our feminist question of the week, is how can we, pretty much just us three, catcall Ben Whishaw.
It's so hard.
Is it?
And so,
I mean, I want to go back to a point that we were just talking about just before the podcast of, like, just us three liking Ben Whishaw, even though he's so model-esque. Yeah. I'm pretty sure every woman in all of Britain wants to.
Oh, sorry. I more meant that we were trying to form a question that was like, how can women express their physical, the physical attractiveness of the bodies of any object or subject of their desire, objects that other people are. But then we came to the conclusion that mostly Ben Whishaw. But no, that's actually hilarious because he's posited to be like a nerdy dork character, but obviously also not. He's posited to be gorgeous.
He's posited
with his hair slightly in his eyes.
It's so perfectly there.
It's so beautiful. I want my hair to be in his hair.
Beautiful cut.
And yeah, just, you know, it kind of reminded me of your hair, Kara.
Oh, really? Yeah, I'm very flattered, but it looks nothing like
not
that
at all.
But you have some kind of wavy look.
I mean, when it was shorter, maybe.
Yeah.
But not currently.
Other things I liked was that he was wearing sort of like a canvas wintry jacket over a very crisp suit.
Yeah, very
and it was
nice.
An interesting juxtaposition for me.
Very nice.
And then the second wardrobe we saw him in, because he was only in two different, really, scenes, disappointingly. That nice little cord but knit getup, kind of a combination of.
Love men in knit wool.
Yeah, it was like some tweediness, but it was also modern.
Yeah, so, I wonder if his character is really posited as a nerdy type, because, like, he's not, like, a loser. It's clear that he's, like, very good. They posit him as, like, young. But I guess they have that point of, like, oh, of course he's scared to go on a plane.
Yeah.
So never mind.
He's like, shown to be competent, but being competent at computers, I don't think is ever.
But competent and confident.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's
true.
A good thing.
But
he's,
I don't know.
Very competent.
I think that probably a lot of movie nerds of that type are that same sort of cockiness. But they're not as
was
pretty.
Was he cocky?
In the face.
I didn't read him as cocky.
Because he's so pretty.
He was pretty cocky. I mean, when he first met with Bond.
I didn't read that. I mean, I actually just kind of read that as sort of like he was defending himself.
I wouldn't have described it as cocky because that's super gendered. But I would say he's very confident. Anyway, we've gotten off topic.
So how? Okay. So what would we do? If Ben Whishaw's on the street. We're construction workers. He walks by. Dragging that wagon. What do we say?
Well, I mean, if I could whistle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on in
I think
real
I'd freak
life,
out and I wouldn't know what to do and I just start yelling.
Oh, can I tell okay, can
no,
I tell a story?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
my story.
I know what it's gonna be.
You both heard this story. The other day when I was leaving work, Bruce Springsteen was leaving the restaurant next to my work, And, I mean, aside from the distance factor, there is no world in which I could actually approach that man and say anything to him, because I would probably turn bright red and start to cry. Like, I would not actually be able to in any world holla at Ben Whishaw in the same way I wouldn't be able to, like, competently look Bruce Springsteen in the eyes, because I would be too nervous.
But maybe he would hug you because you were so nervous.
And then
I think it would be worth it.
I would cry vomit on him. I would cry vomit on him, and then he'd write a song about how awful Toronto is.
And then there you go!
There you go. Mission accomplished!
But I think just even broader, I mean, I think it's one thing that we have decided to answer this question by saying, oh wait, we can't talk to either of these people because they're so attractive. But like, even broader than, you know, how do we talk about basically bodies?
I think
that we
broader is a gendered word.
It isn't. Like, it's not true.
I was being a jerk.
So, okay. So, I guess I can begin by saying I don't have the answer at all, but one thing, it's something that I've certainly struggled with, because I think the only language that we have been taught, at least when hearing people describe female bodies, is one of extreme objectification, and even though, you know, I think, even though I, like, recognize the problems with that, of course, it still gets taken up, and there's, I feel that there's no alternative language to talk about women or men. And the only thing that I've seen, in terms of men is just sort of like a false post-feminist appropriation of the same language, but to talk about men, and describing men as objects, which is silly because obviously it's still very patriarchal.
Elaborate on that. What would be an example? Use Ben Whishaw, as the subject of your desire. All right.
Ben Whishaw. I don't know.
Okay,
actually.
Well, I can give a specific example of like, remember when the Avengers came out, and then we all saw that gif of, what is that actor's name? But he was boxing.
Oh,
was
Chris Evans' booty.
And it was just his butt, and it, all of the internet was like, oh my god, look at that ass. I want to tap that ass. Remember? You know what I mean? It was all just very objectifying and being like, look at his ass as an ass.
Do you remember how you found that gif? Because I posted it on your Facebook wall.
I saw it before. I went through all the gifs.
Yeah, oh god. It was a good one.
But yeah, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So just taking men's body parts and like loving them as parts rather than...
And making funny puns about them, you know? And like...
Example of that. But
Captain,
again,
wait, I have one. I have one. Do Captain Ass-merica.
So bad.
But you know, like, you know, like, it's one of those
Captain America cast
better.
That's, yeah, that is better.
Variations on theme.
Okay, I just thought Skyfast was one case. I'm so ashamed.
God. Yep.
Anyway.
So the language is, I mean, if I were to like say how to you know, express sexuality and sexual desire, whatever we are talking about, I would, without being objectifying or, like, standardly sexist, would be not to talk about body parts in particular, but look at it more as a whole, as a person. And you can see this in how it's done in pornography, which is, like, more feminist pornography, if, you know, you subscribe to that there can be feminist pornography, is more about, like, the people as a whole, like, they treat each other as human mm-hmm. beings rather than just, like, pieces of ass.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way.
That said, there was a shot in this movie where I totally, like, looked at Daniel Craig's ass, and it looked pretty good.
Yeah, but there's
so
nothing...
So what's my way
nothing...
of expressing that?
Mm,
well, you wouldn't, question. Like, you know, the way of... cinematically, the way of expressing that and how it's done with women is, like, you cut off women's body parts mm-hmm. and you just show close-ups of them. And so to still have a nice ass and, like, still appreciate that and, like, people find pleasure in that would be, to, let's say, to have a full shot.
But,
or, like, have a shot that starts with the head and then
but
hands
beyond,
down.
Beyond
my,
of,
my question...
Yeah, I know, but it's just an example of, like,
but
it's okay to take pleasure in these body mm-hmm. parts. But you remember that they're part of a person and they're part of a whole.
So how would you say, sorry, how would you say, like, basically, if you want to communicate to your friend that that whole person is all right, but specifically their ass is fantastic.
If it's already your friend, you're probably at a place where it's okay to say it.
But it's not your friend. It's like
it's
a stranger
like
and you're
you
talking to your friend.
Tell them.
But you're talking to your friend
oh,
and you're going to make a comment about the person walking by. And I mean... I don't think, I agree with what you're saying completely, but I don't think it's viable to be like, First of all, before I make this comment, I want us to bear in mind that this is a full human. That being said, their ass is magnificent.
I know, like, that guy had a hell of a booty, but I'm sure he's also complicated.
Smart.
But it's
three-dimensional, like, just like his ass.
I mean, what we're complaining about, or what we were started the question off of, is, like, that there is no language of desire, as you stated. Yeah. So you shooting this down, you know, saying that there isn't really different. But you can not say anything about their ass. That's always an option. Or you can also be like, that man's ass is really beautiful, instead of being like, look at that ass.
What's the difference?
You say that he is a person.
Oh, so what if you say, look at dat man's ass?
Better.
It's not the dat that's the problem, it's the man.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, actually.
Okay. Or instead of, like, you know, language like, look at the tits on that bitch. Like, look
but
at
no,
her
no, no.
Ass, look
look
at
the
woman.
Tits on that woman.
Yeah.
It's better.
Yeah.
But, like, really, is it really? Because, I mean, sure. I mean,
it's better than
bitch.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a...
Yeah.
But sure, but, like, is it really, it's still, I agree in a way, but it's still not even close to appropriate to be like, look at the tits on that woman.
Look at the breasts on that human.
Yeah, look at that woman's breasts.
Okay, and let's say, you know, on a scale of what would offend you more, obviously a human coming up to you and commenting on your breasts would offend you no matter what. But someone being like, look at those tits, versus like, look at that woman's tits.
Yeah. Okay, no, someone comes to me and says, you have nice tits, or someone comes to me and says, woman, you have nice tits. I'm like, oh. And you recognized my gender separate from them.
I think it is kind of important to just, you know, we look at these body parts as individual body parts.
Yes, I agree with you. I totally agree. I guess the thing that I'm taking issue with, in a way, is that even though I think it's important to kind of recontextualize the fact in that you're talking about a human, I don't think that's enough to negate the fact that even though you say woman, you're still cutting them up in
yeah,
your mind.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
I mean, like, yeah, immediately you're still cutting them up because that's our language of desire currently. But I think that there is a space where you don't do that. Or not
what
you,
if you
but
say,
some people
what if
don't.
You say, to make it more holistic, like, your tits fit really nicely with the rest of your body.
But what if they
Even
don't?
Better.
Woman.
No, what if they don't, though?
Okay, so we know that there's no way that we can think of,
yeah.
of expressing desire or, like, say, complimenting, you know, within this discourse. And so we do have to open our brains and think of different ways of doing it.
I think we should podcast twice about the same boy. And that will make it different.
But one more question, then. I just have one follow-up to that. If that's the case, which I think obviously it is. If that's the case, does that mean the right thing to do is to think the desire, to feel the desire, and not express it? Or is it to express it knowing that your language is shit?
It depends who it is. It depends on the context. To some random person on the street that you want to be, like, nice ass, you can be like, you're really good looking. And you don't have to cut it up like that. And you can still give them a compliment without, like, objectifying just their ass.
Maybe the onus...
And, like, being inappropriate. But if it's a friend that you already know, or a lover or something, you can be like, I really love your ass. I think it's really beautiful. And it's not going to be objectifying. So I think it depends on context. No one's saying repress it, but it's like, be polite to people in the street.
So is it ever really polite to, like, approach someone and comment on their looks?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think you can go up to someone and be like, you're really beautiful, or I really like your style. Or if someone even says something like, I like your smile, or I like your eyes. Like, it's much more appropriate than commenting on a different body part.
Mm-hmm. The sexualized body part is the secondary sex characteristic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, mouths are sexualized, but whatever.
Yeah. They
Women's
aren't?
Mouths are sexualized.
Mouths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, there's, yeah. You said...
Yeah, I think that it's like someone commenting on your mouth is different than someone commenting on your breasts.
Yeah, totally.
Which isn't, you know.
I'm still saying that there's still
a secondary sex characteristic.
Out of somebody, your mouth is totally a secondary sex characteristic.
Yeah, it is.
No,
so someone
I don't
up,
think in the same like
it,
terms.
Women's lips are super sexualized.
They're sexualized, but I don't think that they're
so. If
like,
someone
the same
complimented
term.
Your smile, that's one thing. If someone said you have really hot lips. Like, that would be sexual.
Well, yeah, if someone said you have really hot eyes, that'd be probably pretty sexual as well.
If you said you have really nice lips, I would be like, weird. If someone said you have really nice smile, I'd be like, thank you.
I hope that that's actually what you would do for a compliment. Someone on the street. Weird. Just walk away.
I probably wouldn't say anything.
But I think it, the, I guess the only reason I ask that in general is though, even though it's okay, I think, to compliment people, and I've often seen people who just, like, I love their entire, like, look, and the way they kind of are put together, and I just want to kind of compliment them on it, I typically hold back, because I feel like I'm invading their space, and by, like, imposing sort of my appraisal of their body and their image onto them. And I just feel like it's problematic, even if it's not offensive to them, even if it would make them feel good. Just to assume that they would want to hear your appraisal of them and the way they look is kind of presumptuous.
Yeah, of course.
And so all I do in my day job.
But, like, yeah. What else? Yeah, I mean, you work in a clothing store, mm-hmm. so that's, like, a specific, you're talking about that already. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's already started. Yeah, I think it's complicated because you're not necessarily commenting on their bodies. Because you're complimenting on the clothing that they put onto their bodies. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is a little, I mean, depending on how you want to compliment people, I guess. I'm going to assume that you mean style rather
but
than,
it's
like, the shape
it's
of their bodies.
But it's not just style, but I, like, you, sometimes I see people and I'm like, I like their kind of, I love their style. I like what they're doing with their hair in relation to their style and their face. And, like, the whole kind of look is, like, really nice. And that does include their body and their face. And so for me to go up to them and say, like, oh, I just think you look really great. Or, you know, your look is really nice and I really like it or whatever. Even if I'm kind of being like, person, I know you're a human and holistically and whatever, I still think it's just problematic to, even though it, for most people, it would be a nice thing. Like, I still think it's something that, I don't know, I would,
I think it's also because, like, we're living in a culture where it's more polite to not talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a big part of it. If you were living in, like, a smaller town with, like, less people, it would be much more accepted because people talk to each other more.
Yeah.
And so here in Toronto, like, people would be like, that's pretty weird of this person to just talk to me.
Or they'd be you and just go, weird,
or just,
and run away.
Or just say weird and not say anything else. So I don't think it is necessarily, you know, depending on the compliment that you give, too personal or too much of a judgment.
Mm-hmm. So I guess what we're coming down on is, when catcalling Ben Whishaw, when, before we get to know him, we can say,
you're really beautiful and I love your style.
I love how you put this outfit together, Ben.
Yeah.
I bet you're
Mr.
a hard
Whishaw.
Worker.
You,
I bet you're smart.
I really love your haircut. Where did you get your haircut?
Yeah, and make it a conversation, and then once we're in, and he's our lover.
We're going to take it down.
Then we
go,
Ben, on his ass.
Ben, you have a tight little butt.
So, Ben, if you're out there, and you're in crisis, because women are constantly objectifying you.
Constantly.
I guess we're not actually helping. I thought, here we are, swooping in to save Ben Whishaw. He's going to love us. He's going to think that we are
Maybe
his
he
heroes.
Likes being objectified. You have no idea.
Ben, write in. Write in, Ben.
Our only listener in this world is Ben Whishaw.
Everyone we know, tweet at Ben.
If he has Twitter.
Someone in this room told us he didn't have a laptop.
That was
I
Sarah.
Said that, and I think I read it off of the Skyfall IMDb trivia page. So it must be right.
And you often go on there. That's nice.
I read the TV Tropes page.
After I saw
right
Skyfall,
after.
I did go on the trivia, yes.
I didn't have time to TV Tropes page it. But I would have, and then I would have told you more about, like, the cars.
Yeah, I mean, we would have had a lot more to say if we all went on the TV trip.
Yeah,
because
I would have
been something that someone else already said.
Just read it alphabetically.
Yeah, but if you want to hear about information and facts, that's for another podcast.
So we're open to suggestion of new ways of expressing desire.
For
I think
Ben Whishaw.
For Ben Whishaw, or for anyone. But mostly Ben Whishaw. So I think that's a conversation that needs to be continued. And none of us really specialize in sexuality studies. Mm. So none of us are probably the person
Maybe
to go to
fan
on this.
Fiction would be helpful.
Writing some about Ben? Oh my god, okay, so I could cross over his characters from Cloud Atlas and James Bond.
Well, I'm just saying, I think fan fiction is sort of a potential avenue for creating a new language of desire. And
I, yeah.
Sort of, you know, I guess we can't get into it because it's kind of complicated, but that's something to think about, listeners. And
I agree. Obviously, I always think that appropriation of text is whatever. But regardless, I think we've come down. I don't know. I have to say that in the end, I think it's not. It would be generally a nicer world if more people complimented more people.
People feel
in a nice way.
In a nice way, that
was in a nice way.
And we're judging, like, what is nice. Other people, when they're like, nice tits, they think they're being nice.
Do they?
Yeah.
Sometimes they do. Some people don't realize, like, how inappropriate or how offensive some things are.
I think typically, sorry, just to dovetail on that for a second, I think typically men who come up to women and compliment them don't appreciate the effect it could have because they don't appreciate sort of, the, like, living in a state of vigilance.
Yeah.
To your surroundings and sort of the vulnerability that comes with, like, a big guy walking up to you and standing really close and saying something about your tits. And how that's going to be interpreted by a woman in rape culture.
So it'd be scarier if Bond said it to you than if Q said it to you.
Now, Ben Whishaw, you can say it to me anytime.
Not that Bond is, like, that big of a guy. You know, he's slender.
He's not slender.
He's not slender. He's very built.
Yeah, well, he ain't fat. Like, I wouldn't
think... He ain't fat!
I wouldn't think... If I thought of big guy coming up to me that I was going to be intimidated by, it wouldn't be James Bond of his forms.
You pictured a fatty? I pictured definitely, like, built. I pictured, like, Bane coming up to me.
Yeah, definitely. But Bane is huge.
Bane kind of had a belly, too,
actually. He had a really scary body.
So this is me actually objectifying them in a natural way.
You wanted examples. Here
it's Kate's normal conversations.
Alright, should we move on to actually discussing Skyfall?
I would like to, but I'm not actually sure where to transition in.
We can make a pun, because...
Skyfast!
My name is Sky, and...
She fell today at the gym.
Actually, I fell at the gym, which is full of bodies, and
Skyfall, Skyfall, Patrick's story.
Well, I mean, I guess we could just do preliminary impressions of the movie.
I liked it. It was very beautifully shot.
It was
beautifully shot. Yeah, of course it was. This is, like, the cinematographer is the best at cinematography, except for in True Grit, which just looked like shit.
And Doubt.
Doubt looked not great. Yeah. But that was the other one. Oh, not Doubt. He did Revolutionary Road, which also not amazing looking.
It was pretty good.
With Sam Mendes. Sorry, the cinematographer is who we transitioned into talking of. ASC, BSC. Previously.
Thank you for pointing that out.
What's
that? What it means?
American Society of Cinematographers and the British Society of Cinematographers.
So important. He's
a British expat who often works with directors such as the Coen brothers, though he also shot Sam Mendes' film, Revolutionary
Road. And he shot your favorite movie in the whole world.
And he shot my favorite movie in the whole world, The Assassination of Jesse James with the coward Robert Ford. And so whenever I see a movie he's shot, I am always mentally measuring it against the visceral reaction I had to the cinematography in that movie. This one, moments of really amazing shooting, moments of really stupid shots.
Well, I mean, I didn't feel that there was a lot of stupid shots, but there were a lot of just, you know, standard action shots.
And which is fine. Speaking of... I think a couple shots were stupid.
I think not stupid shots, but jarring or strange shots. That, for me, really... I guess I'm not a film person at all, so I don't really notice cinematography probably the way you guys do, but the only shot that, like, really, really stood out was, like, that cutaway to the legs when they were having that really homoerotic scene.
Yeah.
So can we talk about...
That was an axis break, too, I think.
Yeah, it was
very weird. It felt weird. So can we talk about that, like, basically that scene?
I'm gonna jump into homoeroticism right away. It's like our you guys want to warm up first? About. Well, I thought we were going to talk about the cinematography.
I like that you, like, just, like, you, like, took our cinematography conversation. You're like, you know what was weird about the cinematography? The way it shot a thing I want to talk about.
Psychologized. Okay.
So, well, anyway. I guess we're going into homoerotic.
Well,
now.
Actually, I had another point about the cinematography.
Thank God.
That I wanted to say, which was that relative, especially to the other Bond films, this one did have a lot of things that are markers of Deakins, where there was a lot more long shots that were actually held for significantly longer. Mm-hmm. Especially Quantum of Solace was actually fairly criticized because it cuts so much and so quickly that it was very disorienting. And this was still a very choppy film.
But
not
it was
choppy,
action,
not...
It wasn't choppy.
It was not the right word. It was smooth, but
action sequences always cut really fast. So action movies are usually really fast-paced.
But this one I found, like, didn't do that as much, and especially there were
nicer
some...
balance.
Yeah, and there was, like, especially some, like, the scene with the sweet jellyfish ad lighting it.
Yeah.
Was a long shot. And that, to me, felt a lot like rejecting the previous Bond films, and so the cinematography worked with the theme.
Javier Bardem walking up to
gorgeous,
James Bond.
Yeah,
like,
that was great.
Gorgeous shot, and a pretty good monologue.
Pretty good.
You know, villains love their monologues, which is always weird.
If I were a villain, that was a pretty good one.
If you were a villain, you still talk a lot.
I know, so it would be awful. It'd be like, in the long take, like,
worse.
The camera would roll out. Yeah.
Except for in your monologue, it might be like, like, Javier Bardem's was, like, so smooth and, like, pointed. Mm. And I feel like if it was any of our monologues, it'd be like, wait, wait, no, what I meant to say, I want to start again. I'm starting again.
Well, I would just remember, like, six jokes I wanted to tell halfway through.
So you would stop for a while and just, like, perform stand-up comedy.
Yeah, just do some, like, just do some riffing with Bond. Probably touch his legs
so
also.
So now, let's go into that.
Oh, now you want to.
Well, I mean, we had the shot leading up to it. We had a lot of build. So...
I've come around. I think you guys are right about it.
I think it is an interesting, I thought it was a nice moment. At first, you're like, where is this going? Is he evil because he's slightly gay? But it's
not evil because he's slightly gay, but that the evil is being represented and the discomfort is being heightened because it's a, like, homoerotic moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but like, it wasn't even, I mean, yes, it was homoerotic, but it was threateningly so. Yeah. So it was supposed to show how he was threatening James Bond, but James Bond, you know.
Subverted that shit.
Diffuses that right away in a very campy and awesome moment. Yeah. I thought it was good because, as we've talked about just before, you know, James Bond is so campy, and I think it's so important to play up that camp and
define
like something so important.
Define what you mean by campy here.
Campy is like a gay. Said that so rudely. I felt. A homosexual language of taking something normal and kind of making it a little extreme, mm-hmm. and so you play up the little ironies.
Like satire in a way.
In a way, but in smaller moments. Like, you wouldn't have a full, it wouldn't be a satire.
Right,
it would be
right.
A small moment. So, I just read a paper about it recently, and I'll cite one of their examples, which is, like, in Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, which is obviously a problematic show, but... in terms of neoliberalism and stuff, but there are moments of camp which are super, like, subverting. So they'll go into a room and then they'll look at a curtain and then put it on as a dress and kind of, like, subvert the normal thing.
Okay.
Mm.
So that, you know, that's kind of what campiness is. Not that I'm, like, the expert on it.
I always consider, like, I've read it, I actually did read a couple articles about camp back in school, but for me, I still don't consider it, like, a scholarly term. I just consider it to be, like, when I think of camp, I think of the Adam West Batman.
Right.
And John Waters.
I actually think that camp, I do view it as a scholarly term, particularly. I haven't seen... I mean,
more of
I,
a personal thing, just because I'm not able to distance it from...
I've seen it used in queer studies quite a bit in terms of, like, different gay male identities and sort of their construction and drag as well. So... back to campiness about James Bond and that scene. So was your point that that scene is really, really campy?
No, it's that by the time James Bond responds, it plays up the camp of James Bond. Because I think James Bond as a whole, as a franchise, at least in the most recent movies, are super campy.
Yeah. So what I was wondering, and I think...
I just feel like these movies were trying to not be campy in the way that Pierce Brosnan was.
I feel like this one kind of went...
it, this one did. It totally did. It obviously did, because at every 6 seconds they said, let's go back to basics, and then, like, did. But the basics, they, yeah.
But this is something that we were talking about before the podcast, and you disagree with, but I don't think I articulated it right, is that's what I mean in relation to especially Casino Royale, which was very, very glamorous, I think. For me, this was, like, this was very much a back to basics and, like, a stripping down of Bond, despite, like, the, obviously the high budget and the, like, big action scenes.
No, what I was saying was that I thought that this movie was a rejection of Casino Royale. Like, this movie was more, I felt, a response to Casino Royale than it was to Pierce Brosnan, whereas Casino Royale was more of a response to the camp. So this one, it didn't quite do the same, like, it had moments of being like, did you expect an exploding pen, which is obviously a reference to the campiness of previous Bond films, but it also had...
But I did find it less campy than Casino Royale.
But it also, well, but it also had him saying Bond, James Bond, and also had him having a martini shaken, not stirred, whereas in Casino Royale, when he orders a martini, she says, would you like it shaken or stirred, and he said, do you really think I look like a give-a-damn? And that felt to me like this is a new edgy James Bond, and this one was more of a, this is the James Bond you know and love, look at this sweet old car, you know? And so maybe it was more of an actual harkening back to, like, the earliest Bond films, like the Connery era, which I don't think had the exploding pens and all the weird 90s Bond stuff.
Right.
The pre-9/11 Bond, if you will.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, I think that makes sense. I guess one of the questions I have with the homoerotic scene, which, Kara, I think you gestured towards a bit, was that, like, do they introduce that homoeroticism to make him more menacing, or is it, like, an interesting queer scene?
I think, like, that, I think what works really, it works on two different levels. Mm-hmm. Like, it works for that crowd that would find gayness threatening.
Yeah.
And then it works for the crowd that would find James Bond responding in that way, or, like, having had a non-heterosexual encounters before, as mm-hmm. awesome. So I think it works for both people, and I can see your initial reaction of finding it uncomfortable, because it is. I think it is playing off of that,
but
and then it's playing off of not being.
So, but I want to, like, reiterate that I wasn't uncomfortable because the moment was, like...
Oh, yeah, but it was supposed to be, was supposed to be threatening.
Right, I was uncomfortable because, like, making a character sort of gay to make him villainous-ish.
Sure.
But I actually agree that I think largely the film was maybe rejecting the idea of that being a menacing characteristic. Because, like you said, the idea of the protagonist being like, I'm not weirded out by gay things, means that the movie isn't weirded out by gay things.
Especially, like, the idea as, like, of the protagonist as Bond, who is the representative of men, or, like, you know, supposed to be the pinnacle or the idol, right? So for him to say, like, something like that, I think is probably a good thing. But also, I think, I question if it reflects sort of, like, this new... sort of post-sexual identity politics era of, like, having it cool that you're a trisexual. Sort of like post-feminism for guys.
Trisexual.
You know.
You'll try anything.
Exactly. Sex in the City, am I right? Like, I wonder if basically it's buying into that characterizing of, like, it's cool that Bond has, like, he's done so many different sexual things that he's even had some kind of sexual relationship with a guy.
Or can joke about it.
Is it?
Yeah,
it
or
is.
At least can joke about it and, like, you know, if it's true or not that he's had sexual encounters like that, it doesn't matter because the point of him saying it was to establish that he has power over the situation.
I also have to say, though, that after that moment... Bardem didn't play up this, like,
ever again.
Yeah, which is...
So he might not be queer character, he might just have been trying to, you know, get power.
But regardless, what that also means is that the character, therefore, is no longer being villainously gay.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
But is it... Okay, sorry, I actually agree with this interpretation, but I want to play devil's advocate for just 1 second. To come back to my point, it's like, yes, it is cool that, like, this character is trying different things, but is it cool because it's promoting, again, it's potentially promoting this new wave of, like, sexual adventurer and exploration that's very problematic in its own way, that is, like, the fundamental post-feminist ideology?
No.
Why?
Because it's like, what is more problematic? Because post-feminism for women is super damaging, obviously, but, like, post-feminism for a guy who, like, wants to have sex with all the women, and now we're gonna call him out on having sex with a guy, too? Like, he's already terrible. I think if it was opening up sexual desire to not just be towards women, and he actually had desire towards man and could do it, or, you know, people who watch James Bond and think that that's empowering, I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a larger realm of desire that isn't forcing him to have sex with anyone, because I think that's a lot of the damaging part of post-feminism for women is that they feel obliged to have sex with in all of these different ways. But he has power over all the people he's having sex with, because that's who James Bond is.
True. I guess just the thing is that it's not just about forcing women to have sex in different ways. It's also, and I can cite this article because I just finished reading it.
I wish that we had an alarm I could sound. Citation alert.
But basically, one of the things that she says is one of the repertoires of post-feminism is called transforming the self, which means, like, remaking a woman's interior. To make her attitudes towards sex and subjectivity more attractive to men, which means, like, changing her attitudes about sex so that she's more willing to try different things and be, like, a quote-unquote adventurer. And it seems like that discourse might be at play here as well.
to make him more attractive to women, to make him more attractive to men, to what end?
To promote his, like, his coolness as a sexual icon, that the new sexual icon has to be a sexual adventurer and has to be very diverse in
his sexuality.
He already
is a sexual adventurer, though. Like, I don't see but the difference he, because, like, other
having
than,
a,
like...
It's just, like, having sex with everybody, a lot. But does that
and,
make
like,
you adventurous?
Race.
I was gonna say that there's, like... I don't actually know, but I imagine James Bond probably did do some edgy racial... sexual things.
And, like, yeah, he had, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it was edgy or progressive at the time, but now looking back, he's had sex with, like, all ethnicities.
Every so, single one.
Yeah.
We counted.
Yeah. All
so
15 of them.
So I do think that there is, yeah. I think it is opening up.
I've just been waiting and waiting this whole time to talk about how great it would be.
To have sex with Ben Whishaw.
Ben Whishaw and Craig. Daniel Craig.
Porn. Would you watch that porn?
Yes.
Yes, I would read that
you
fan
said
fiction.
You would watch the Obama's
I'm gonna,
porn.
I would exist. Not watch the Obama's porn.
If
weird
it existed.
Invasion of privacy.
Okay, whatever. This is not related to yes. How sexy would be if Ben Whishaw and James Bond kissed. And now that I know James Bond is kind of into it, I know that the fan fiction is going to explode.
But we don't know.
No, I know
he's
we
kind
don't.
Of into it.
But fan
and
fiction
also,
will know
there
he's
already
kind of into
is
it.
So much queer James Bonding.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, James Bondage?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that has been taken
first
a million
pun
times.
Ever.
Patent pending.
You know, I mean, pun. Such a big part of James Bond is that, like, hyper-masculinity and, like, the machoism and, like, whatever. So it's there. It's not, like, this is going to be the first. I think probably the directors were more calling to that reading of camp. Like, I think Sam Mendes is super smart and would have known that that exists and was probably playing up on that campiness in
yeah.
those moments.
I bet he misses Kate Winslet.
Oh my god, I thought he divorced her.
I don't know, I bet they miss each other. Remember that year when she was nominated for an Oscar and he wasn't? That's the year they divorced.
So he probably ended it with her.
Yeah, he's just jealous of her success, especially because Revolutionary Road. Is it called Revolutionary Road or was
yeah.
it called Revolution Road?
Revolutionary.
There was
I think Revolution Road or something R Road was a different movie.
Yeah, with Mark Ruffalo, he ran
yeah.
over some kid. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask us.
Mark Ruffalo's hilarious.
He's so handsome, though, in
yeah,
like a
whatever.
Like jiggly way. Oh.
So do we
talk about bodies?
Oh my
and
god.
Jiggly,
you
come
hate
over here.
Fat men.
No, I love it. I just think it's crazy.
That fat.
It's like
jiggly. You said jiggly.
I didn't say fat though.
So fat.
Hey man, I like the way you jiggle. What do you guys think?
But in the belly
or
not?
Not
in the booty.
We have so much more to talk about.
I wanted to it was about sex and women. And actually what I wanted to say was that we actually only have three. There were three Bond ladies.
Wait, can we finish talking about masculinity
oh,
first
sure.
before we move
sorry,
on?
Oh, yeah, I actually have a couple of thoughts.
I
sorry, Karis,
yeah.
go on. but I have
so,
some thoughts.
So, first of all, obviously we should mention, like, how Bond, like, fell to drink and, like, getting out of shape because he lost his career, which I think points to, like, how intrinsic it is to masculinity, like, careers are.
Yeah.
Men build identity so much around what they're doing and how much money they're making and
what
profession they are. And so I think that's
yeah.
a really interesting thing to point to when he doesn't have that in his life, that kind of like normal masculine factor of how easy it is to kind of like, you know, wake up at a bar.
But the character,
go ahead.
The character didn't lose his career. He chose to not return until he was needed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he got fired, but I mean, like...
They willingly killed him or put
yeah.
him at risk.
Okay,
but,
yeah.
But, like, I would say, I would actually, I agree with you completely, and I would actually take it one step further and say that the whole film is, like, an allegory for the failure of masculinity.
I wouldn't say that, because it, well, this is getting, I would let you, but by the end, everything reinstates itself.
Yeah, it's an exploration of that topic, and I mean, it's not, I mean, well, okay, let me take a step back. So, if we are currently in an era where masculinity is failing men, and we don't know what's going to happen, and I think that we're not sure what the future of masculinity looks like right now, and sort of the construction of gender for men, what that looks like. Bond for me is sort of like exploring the issues, highlighting them, and then sort of like hopeful but silly idea that like things will return to normal again. I mean, I think the whole idea of exploring like, are we antiquated? Are these methods of like attracting people, of dealing with things, of dealing with conflict, contrived now and outdated and silly and like laughable? And how do we like basically, how do we maintain our own self-respect and agency and individuality in this context? And obviously at the end, Bond kind of gets it all back, but like that's sort of just like a utopian ending for this issue.
I mean, I think it starts off that way totally, but I think it instead of like actually subverting any dominant forms of like masculinity and crisis and stuff like that, it is actually a tool of reinstating masculine dominance.
I'm not saying it's not problematic. I think that it is sort of like, hey men, this all sucks, but don't worry, things are gonna be great again and you're all gonna get your privilege back.
I feel like it's
I don't think it's like the thing, sorry. Is what is its goal? Its goal is definitely not to undermine masculinity in any sort of way.
No.
It's to reinstate it and show that it has even more power. So maybe even
poor Kate.
So maybe even James Bond, like, gay moment is more of a restating of his sexual power than it is of anything else.
I feel like this movie and The Dark Knight Rises had a lot of thematic similarities, and a lot of just general similarities in that, like,
Shadows,
leagues of them. Just but like, also, like, in throughout the film, like, the person who in the previous two films has been, like, a specimen of absolute physical prowess, has their body fail them, is unable to perform the same tasks they were once able to perform, is struggling to seem relevant, and then has to sort of return to an earlier iteration of themselves in order to retain their ability to perform their tasks.
Totally.
And what I think that reflects is because, and I'm gonna, Sam Mendes is American, right?
No.
Is he not? He directed American Beauty. I feel like he must be American.
I mean, we can look it up, but I'm pretty sure he's Scottish.
Probably. Okay. Well, then it's not an American
also,
thing. I was going to say it was, like, it seemed to be reflecting what I think is an American concern with, like, the failure of America currently and a desperation for that empire to be as powerful as it once was, even though it's getting older and its systems are failing it. But maybe it's just a general idea of the failure of empire, the failure of old guards, and I think that, like, James Bond being Britain's main man, and Batman kind of being America's in a lot of ways, this reflects just sort of a zeitgeist concern, and probably one that is very patriarchal, of, like, the way we used to do things is being threatened, and, and like you said, but there are sort of fairy tales where things are okay in the end.
Well, this is I agree with you completely. I agree with everything you said. I would just, the only thing that I would tweak for me is that, like, rather than seeing it as a failure of America, I think it's a global concern of the failure of masculinity, right?
And I
guess, I wouldn't say global.
Western.
When I say like of like America, I do mean sort of like the patriarchal system of America.
Yeah. Certainly, and like the failure of like hate this word now, but privileging basically. But I do like how you put it. Of this is sort of, and I'm not saying that it's progressive. What I'm saying is that it is a, for the first half, a mirror of those concerns, that it takes up those concerns, and then it, like, you know, kind of personifies them in the film, and then the second half, I agree, is like a fairy tale. It is like placating all these concerned men about, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like this neoliberalist thing. It's like, if you work harder at being a real man, like, everything will go back to being normal.
FYI, guys, masculinity is not dead. Just keep
trying.
Just
like, you just suck at it.
Yeah, if you don't believe, you're not going to get there.
Then
you know?
Stop using your fancy gun and start using your dad's hunting rifle.
Yeah, exactly. I actually think that's a really good point, is like, which is really sad when you think about it, because the reality is, in my opinion, that masculinity is failing people. And so to send that message, that which is very neoliberal, of like, keep trying and you'll get there, when everything around people is setting them up for that,
but not even just keep trying, but also like reject what's happening now.
Yeah,
like reject the new way of doing things is the message of this movie. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, I guess
we're still relevant. Yeah,
I guess it is sort of in this way, like, this reading does ignore M's narrative. And it also does ignore the idea of age being a factor, because I think that is huge into it.
Totally, totally. And like, I mean, I think it's not just
too
a privileging,
old for this shit.
It's not just a privileging of men, it's a privileging of, like, young, able-bodied, like, kind of rich men. white men, basically. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so how does Emma's narrative play into that, then? Do you think?
I had really no thoughts about Em. You did, so why don't you start?
Oh, I just wanted to talk about her. I think she was a pretty interesting character.
So why?
No, I don't think that's
true. Can you elaborate on why you think she's interesting?
Well, I mean, in terms of relative to the other films, I feel like she was more of the, like, quote, Bond girl in this, because her relationship to Bond was the most pivotal one and the most influential to the plot, but also she had a complete arc over the film instead of being, like, the one-note character I think she typically is, which is just sort of in charge.
Yeah.
She actually had complications and failures and things were her fault, and she felt guilt and anger, and I feel like this, maybe just in terms of, like, the Bond franchise, what the admittedly, like, five films I've seen in it, this is the first time they've tried to have a secondary character also be a realized character. And, you know, Dame Jude is pretty good at things.
Well, I wonder if this is sort of, I mean, I don't know, I just thought of this on the spot, and I didn't originally have a lot of thoughts on M, so feel free to shoot it down, but I wonder if this is sort of, there's potentially a message here that, like, see, this is what happens when women are running men or are in control and sort of, like, they basically fuck up and suck.
Well, so much of her narrative is about being a mother figure, which I think is really problematic and stereotypical, as well as they call to her having a sentimental attachment to Bond as, like, being her big downfall.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, interesting because, like, she does have motivation, I suppose, and she does have, you know, different feelings and, like, is important to the plot and, like, is self-sacrificing like mothers are. So, you know.
But at the same time, you know, they don't, I mean, they do certainly call to that. They actually make reference to her being weak, but that at the same time, they really do portray her as, like, sort of cold and bad for being that way, bad for making decisions that send people to their death. And as a matter of fact, the whole villain and his existence is her fault for being not caring enough, for being not sentimental. So, like, how do you reconcile the fact that they're kind of portraying her as sentimental, letting her emotions get in the way, and at the same time, her kind of non-emotional decisions are to blame for everything bad that happens in the
but
movie.
But I don't think, like, I mean, maybe I'm reading it differently, but I don't see that the decisions that she made as being the wrong ones.
I don't think that they're wrong either. I mean, they seem smart, but, like,
and they're definitely
But they're portrayed as cruel.
Right.
They're definitely. But
I don't think that they are, and I don't even think that Bond saw them as cruel, and so that's probably why I didn't, because, you know, you align with the protagonist and whatever.
But there are times when you're definitely called to align with, like, the antagonist, when he, like, takes his teeth out, and he's like, do you know what this is like for me?
Question.
And, like, he has that
how,
weird face-melting thing.
What kind of spies are these that they let him have a whole secret metal device in his mouth that they didn't notice? Like, that could have been something that he could have used to do sinister things. Like, I just feel like at some point they should have searched him better. And that shouldn't have been in his mouth when he was put in a prison.
Yeah, anyway, I saw that it was, like, less...
Kara doesn't care about this
and
point.
And he did do sinister things, as a matter of fact.
I
mean, took his mouth out, and it is weird.
There's a lot of, like, obviously problematic plot holes and stuff like that, always riddled throughout action movies. But I don't think that it's set up as M making these calls as, like, her being cold or something. It's more like the system itself, like, why are they working for something like this that would do something like that? Anyway, so it is, I guess, regardless of how you do it, it's interesting that her main points are not being caring enough and being too caring. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the way to hark on a woman.
Yeah.
So, like, that is just an easy
way.
There's
so many ways she can fail.
Yeah. It's like that, you know, it can't be a complicated both of those things. Like, she cares for Bond, but she has to do what's right for
the country. That's
exactly
what it was. How is that not what the narrative was?
Yeah.
That's exactly what the narrative was.
Yeah, I know. So, that's what I'm saying. But it's like, as we were just talking about, like, Sky asked the question of, like, how can you be one or the other, but it's not one or the other.
Well, I didn't say how can you be one or the other. I just was kind of calling for a reconciliation of those two issues in, like, a holistic person.
Right.
Which we kind of did. But after arguing a bit and talking about how sinister Heavy Redden's face was. Which was
so weird. I just, get your spy shit together, guys.
But I do think it's problematic, like, mother narratives, but only just because they're tired, and, you know.
I guess I didn't read it. Like, I mean, I know what you're saying, and it's not that I disagree with it, but I didn't think that was the main part of it for me.
What was it then with the relationship?
I just don't feel like it was a mother thing until the end. Like, that's when I first started reading it like that. Like, when she died in his arms, I was like, oh, yeah, she is kind of a parent figure. But well, I don't think throughout that was necessarily
the point. They show up at his house where his parents died and have, like, heart-to-heart. Like, and it's, like, really her taking up the mothering role.
And he's, of course, of an orphan.
Like, yeah. But it wasn't, that wasn't how it read throughout. Like, obviously it ended up that way, obviously. Yeah. But
I think it is how it was read throughout. And probably not for me. Okay, not for you. But, I mean, I would think that it's, like, a, oh, sure, then let's move on. I think a definitely more interesting, or the most problematic, like, gender issue that I would say is him having sex with a sex worker with no, like, lead on of, like,
you
her
mean the time that he
desire.
Rapes her and she likes it,
like,
right?
No, her expression of desire for having it whatsoever. He just shows up naked in the shower and, like, it's so uncomfortable because, like, when they're flirting, and that's in quotes, at the bar, like, she's shaking with how nervous she is.
And scared.
And it's not at all saying that she wants to have sex with him. And no. It feels like an exchange. It feels like, I will take you to the, I mean, take me to this place and we'll have sex. You know, it feels like an exchange. And I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah, that was
so
fucked up. I read it as rape, basically.
It would be so easy to solve by, like, having him show up and then not just get naked in the shower and be like, hello, I'm here. And her be like, oh my gosh, hello.
Let's shower together.
You know, I mean, at least any sort of, like, you know, instigation, or she didn't even have to start it, but response.
And I think, you know, the other thing was, like, I agree, it's totally fucked, but it also, like, really plays into the narrative of, like, if you push hard enough or whatever, they'll like it eventually. That, like, he shows up and it's, like, this really fucked, rapey kind of coercive sex, but, like, if you just take that risk, like, she kind of likes it and turns around and, like, goes with it. And it's just, like, playing into, like, a really problematic rape myth.
Yeah, but it's not even that you have to push hard enough, it's that they want it already.
It's not like there was any struggle.
Yeah, and if there was a struggle, that would be even more exciting, because you would have her have any sort of response, you know what I mean? You could see her come around and then be like, okay, you know, she came around. Mm-hmm. But it just started and was obviously awful.
And the fact that she was a sex worker does
heighten
that idea. What about his other sex scene with his
money? Okay.
Where they didn't actually, we didn't really see much sex.
Yeah, they may or may not have had sex.
Yeah.
They might have. But, you know, when she first comes on screen and she's, like, a terrible driver, I was like, really?
Women.
Women. Like, play up this stereotype more. And then she shoots Bond, and then she's terrible at her job. And then,
and then she becomes a secretary.
I mean, yeah, and then she becomes a secretary, and it's super strange. But I think more what struck me as strange is James Bond was like, so you want to go back into the field? And she's like, yeah, of course.
And he's like,
And then by the end, you don't see any change of why she wouldn't be on the field, but then she decides that it's not for her. But you have no...
Yeah,
when did that happen?
He just said it, and she was like, that is how I feel.
Yeah, and that was super problematic. Yeah.
I absolutely agree with that one.
Yeah.
I have no complicated feelings about that one.
Yeah.
You know, actually, for a Bond film, there's surprisingly few women in it.
It's because it was about, like, M, yo.
Yeah, I guess.
M for mother.
I liked that.
M for man now.
Good. I liked that.
But now he'll be a father figure.
I liked that Finny kept calling her Emma. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, that's cute.
The groundskeeper.
That is cute. He was really sweet.
What character was that? Like, the weird, like, Alfred character? This is exactly James Bond in every way. By James Bond, I meant Batman.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, and you both laughed like I'd said Batman.
Batman, actually, yeah.
Do we want to talk about anything interesting? I think I can frame it in a gendered way, but first, I think it's interesting, the utilization of, like, childhood home to destroy enemies, and, like, you know, the... M making these little light switch bombs and, like,
domestic
all these, like,
weapons.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting.
Well, like, I was trying to kind of unpack that for myself, and what I thought was weird was it seemed to kind of be, like, the destruction of everything Bond was, you know, in order to become who he needs to be. But we hadn't ever known anything about who Bond was until this movie gave it to
us.
Well,
actually, I think that I agree with you in a way. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Before I even made my point, you agreed with
that.
No, it's okay.
What's your point?
No, it's okay.
You didn't have one.
I did. I was just going to say, I agree with you in a way, but I actually think it's sort of the opposite in another way. Like, if you look at the Daniel Craig canon, it's sort of like they do, like, Vesper in Casino Royale does talk about how he's an orphan.
Yeah.
And, like, has this chip on his shoulder or whatever. But like, I just want to say, like, but shows that he sort of has, like, come up and become sophisticated and, like, risen. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like
the
he goes back to the part
James Bond rises.
Yeah, exactly. He goes back to the part of himself that's, like, potentially more human, less kind of sophisticated, less advanced, and then destroys it. So he can remain, basically, as he is.
I guess that's fair. Maybe this whole movie, that's actually a really good reading. The idea that this movie, like, sort of gestures towards making Bond a three-dimensional character with a past and then destroys that idea.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that, I guess, the next film.
So it's like campy. Up. Are we going to be campy? Are we going to be serious? No, we're going to be campy again. And then they end with, like, the Bond will be back. And so it'll be very interesting to see whether he's more or less multifaceted in the next movie.
Maybe this movie was mostly just being like, yeah, fuck your gritty reboots.
Yeah.
And the next one's going to have more exploding pens.
I mean, I doubt he'll be more multifaceted, because James
Bond
isn't
even... Were you going to say multi-phallic?
No.
That's what I was saying. Multi-phallic.
I really wasn't. But he's not a multifaceted character ever.
But that's
why
it's weird that we saw his childhood
home. But even that's not, like, that complicated.
But it's more complicated than Bond.
Yeah. He has, like, I mean, if you look at all of his lines in the whole movie, it's, like, five things. You know what I mean? Like, I think the point of him... And the point of James Bond as a franchise is to have, like, a pretty blank slate human that the audience, the male audience, can put onto and, like, fulfill, you know, dream fulfillment.
No, I exactly agree, which is why I think it's weird that they started giving him a backstory just to get rid of his backstory.
Yeah, but the backstory is just, like, so slight.
I feel like it's still monumental relative to him being completely a blank slate.
I think it is important, actually, because... the whole movie is named after it, and, like, I actually think it is an important plot theme that he chooses not only to blow it up, but, like, the line before he blows it up is, like, I hate this place.
Yeah.
And this sort of, like, it is, like, a total rejection of that aspect of him.
Can you imagine actually being near an explosion and having a one-liner? Like, I just wouldn't, like, if my childhood home blew up, it wouldn't be, like, da-da-da-da-da. I'd just be like, oh god, like, this is awful.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say words out loud.
I wonder if I'm going to survive the blow.
I'd say, she says out loud to herself.
How much can I really expect this to kind of go out from the house? It's probably going to be big. Maybe I'm not far enough. Those would be the thoughts that I'm having in an explosion.
There was a lot of fighting himself. I don't know.
That was good.
Yeah, I liked the movie. I thought the movie was pretty good.
I
liked it a lot more than Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, that was the worst.
I just don't remember anything about it, except for, like, there was some fight sequence that was so intricate-y I, like, stopped watching it.
Mm. Sure.
Like, looked away until it was over.
Yeah. So.
Any last-minute thoughts about James Bond?
There must be some connection between all of the talk about parents and, like, M being motherly and blowing up your childhood home.
And dying.
Yeah.
Probably there is. Do we know what it is?
I mean, I think that's enough. Me just saying words next to each other. I think that's enough.
Say the buzzwords. Yeah.
There probably is a connection. Sound off in the comments.
Yeah. Should I go? Should I make a statement?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's about sort of like James Bond. I'm leaning forward. I'm here. James Bond, basically, if you look at him, even in the old school days, is sort of about the ultimate sort of sophisticated masculinity, like, not animalistic or, like, primitive, but it's about having, like, this constructed identity with, like, technology and sophistication.
I'm gonna posit the English male identity.
Yeah. That's a good point, actually. Yeah, so this, like, English male identity, and that potentially gets briefly subverted in this film because he's antiquated and his technological methods are out of date. But I think by obliterating, basically, a mother figure... and his childhood home and everything that links him to, like, non-constructedness and sort of, like, robotness, basically, or, like, he basically, again, reaffirms the masculinity that he has clung to and was briefly undermined in the film. Like, the whole conflict is, like, is he going to be able to maintain the self that he's always maintained? And the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so much of masculinity is about... Western masculinity is about, like, self-making and being self in charge and not having, like, a strong mother figure or, like, mothering in your life and no nurturing and, like, working for something but still feeling independent in that. Like, he's clearly not just following rules for MI6 and stuff.
So recapturing your traditional masculinity by killing your mom. Parental symbols.
Yeah.
Well, good.
And, you know, like, your childhood when you were weak. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he hid in that space for so long.
2 days. And when he came out, he was no longer a boy.
He was a man.
And he was,
I feel like that's when, like, Britney Spears is not a girl, not yet a woman should have started playing or something, you know?
No, that's because it was, it happened.
The manhood thing.
He wasn't it in happened. Between.
That's true.
When he was occupying that liminal space in the, what was that called? The priest's hole?
Yeah, something like that. The priest passage.
The priest passage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because I went to the chapel.
Yeah. Went partway to the chapel, hey?
It didn't go the whole
middle
way.
Of the crown.
Yeah. It's like, and also, like, how do people not notice that? They're like, oh, this is a secret. I think people would notice a giant hole in the ground with stairs coming out of
it. Yeah.
Come on, guys.
In the middle of the field.
And I wouldn't go into those stairs in the middle of the field. That's so scary.
Yeah.
What do you think of stairs and fields, listeners?
Scary.
Listeners.
Super scary.
Also, if you have any thoughts about Bond girls, could there ever be a feminist Bond girl?
Oh my gosh, also, something really important to note is that this franchise, I think, is the first one ever to say Bond women instead of Bond girls in all of their franchises.
Oh, did they?
And merchandise.
Yeah. Oh, Bond women. I apologize. Yeah. I had not noticed that.
Super important.
Very cool. Well, if you can think of any way to have feminist Bond women, or if you happen to know Ben Whishaw.
Yeah. If you know anyone who might know him.
If people who know people who know people who know him. We can network. That's fine.
Or if you just have sexy pictures of him.
Yeah. Or not sexy ones. Just pictures of his hair. It's fine. Let us know at a website of onesown.com. And until next week. Skyfall. Sing the song. The Adele song, guys. This is sing along. Hold your breath and count to 10. Feel the earth move.